Now some thoughts on the safety in the woods for your kids. Is it safe out there?
Hi, this is Susan calling from Minneapolis. I'm calling because I'm on my way to pick up my daughter from summer camp. She's 16. She goes to camp for months in the summer. And when you get to camp, they take your phone. And she has been off backpacking, hiking around the mountains, having a glorious time. One of the best things we do for our child all year.
Great, Susan. Of course, not everyone can afford the cost of summer camp these days. Paying a pretty sum to get the youngsters to head out is not an option for all of us. Getting outside to play. Is it a challenge for you to get your kids into the great outdoors?
This is Christina from Tampa, Florida. And my kids don't play outside because it is so hot in Tampa. Their head gets all sweaty, their hair sticks to their face, and they want to come back in.
Here's Chris on Facebook. Of course, outdoor play is great, but many kids with disabilities don't have environments, playgrounds, and accessible outdoor areas they can use and that are ADA compliant.
My name is Maggie from Vancouver, Washington. I find that parents really just need to make a concerted effort when making sure their children get outside to play. I know you're tired when you get home from work. We all are, but you still need to make the effort to make sure your kid has that wonderful outdoor experience.
And, of course, being in gorgeous Vancouver helps. Thanks so much, Maggie. Love your stories and advice and experiences. Play with us at 8778MYTAKE. Follow us on Twitter, at The Takeaway, all one word, at The Takeaway. Later this hour, the design of risk-free play. Oh, yes, gone are the days of unsupervised diving boards, kids riding in the back of the pickup truck to go get ice cream in the summer. Helmetless bicycle riding, that's gone. Abandoned rock quarry swimming holes. Making the playground swing set go over the top bar. Wasn't that awesome in the old days? Those memorable childhood activities have left a legacy of lawsuit horror stories, possible organ donors, and miles of chain link fence barriers. All this starts to explain why kids perhaps aren't immediately anxious to get outside these days.
Bennett Rogers on the road between Corvallis and Eugene. The reason kids don't play outside is because parents are afraid. I picked up 15 concussions by the time I was 18. My parents were still okay with me playing outside. My friends didn't get to play with me.
Nervous Bennett there in Oregon. We'd love to hear your stories at 8778MYTAKE. Post a comment on thetakeaway.org as to whether your kids do get outside to play or if it's a chore. What do you tell them to get outside? Or would you prefer that they stay in the air-conditioned sort of padded room of your own home? In this century where worried parents, realistic risk, and lots more kids have to be factored into the design of play spaces, we decided to talk to the man himself. David Rockwell, legendary architect and designer, founder of the Rockwell Group, is the brains behind Imagination Playgrounds here in New York City. David, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
It's great to talk to you. You know, how has the design of play and the aesthetic of play changed in your lifetime? I suspect you may have ridden in a pickup truck or two on the way to the ice cream store.
Well, remember, I was a kid in Mexico, so there were no safety regulations and there were bulls involved, so it was a whole different thing. It's interesting because I got interested in playgrounds because I had two kids and
right.
They were growing up in New York, and there are great playgrounds in New York, amazing looking playgrounds. And as my kids started to get older, I recognized that there was one component of play that had been important to me. And as I started to do research on it, and it was about a 5-year self-initiated research project on play and playgrounds. In some ways, creative risk had been almost intentionally engineered out of playgrounds.
It seemed that way.
And they became about linear play, fixed equipment that you could get approvals on. And as we started to pick at that a little bit, it was really fueled by post 9/11, having built this viewing platform in Lower Manhattan through a foundation. That foundation asked, is there another project we'd like to initiate downtown? I looked around at the playgrounds and I watched how much more fun my kids had playing with the box something came in with than the thing itself. And surprisingly, we went to the city. I assumed they'd be an obstacle.
Because lawyers design playgrounds and insurance companies design play equipment, and that's responsible for this linear play that you were talking about.
That, and also I think just sort of if you look at the 70s, late 60s and the 70s in New York, it was a time of enormous experimentation of playgrounds. Richard Dattner's playground in Central Park, Paul Freeberg's playground, and even Louis Kahn and Noguchi collaborated and spent 5 years trying to build a really progressive playground in Riverside and couldn't get it through. As things became more about fencing off one area, in some of the great play spaces in New York, Seward Park, Betsy Head, and Brownsville, which we're now renovating, during the Moses era were basically replaced with hard surfaces and a continuous fence. So the city turned out to be a fantastic partner because they were very interested in free play. They were interested in unstructured play. And I think they recognized that in order to have kids' lives not dominated by a piece of technology in front of them, that play had to be more engaging. And so that became kind of the way in many years of testing with the city to say, how do we make it safe, but how do we in some ways allow kids to do what they do better than grown-ups, which is dictate how they want to play? Unstructured, child-directed play that is, there's still creative risk. Your thing may not work out. And that's not a bad thing to recognize early on in life. Right. You don't want to break a leg. But learning to collaborate and not have it be linear parent-directed play
That's a great thing. Important. You know, you've described a fusion of eras in New York where this experimental play space development was going on. But also, you know, you can't stop kids. I mean, New York's period of chaos in the 60s and 70s was also a period of free play, the development of graffiti and all the kinds of weird play spaces that, you know, no lawyer is going to approve. But, you know, that's kind of fused into your idea that you're talking about. What have you come up with?
Well, the Imagination Playground started as a permanent location at the South Street Seaport.
Right.
And it is a kind of multi-layered space with hundreds and hundreds of loose parts, really inspired by post-World War II adventure playgrounds in Europe where kids and volunteers would take rubbish and things they found and make structures together.
Cool.
So we found a way to create that opportunity with a couple of key observations. One is loose parts in a public park without a play associate are really souvenirs.
Right.
So there had to be someone there to manage it if you're going to allow that kind of interaction. And I remember sitting around at the first test play date. There were about 20 adults at a public school. Adrian Benepe was there, a lot of educators. And we watched the kids, and they came out, and they had all these pieces, and no one told them what to do. So the first thing the boys did, a couple of boys took these noodles and started to have a sword fight. You can imagine the adults wanted to break that up right away. Adults didn't move. Then other kids started making individual structures. Within 15 or 20 minutes, you saw kids looking around saying, well, what if I link my thing to your thing? And it was fascinating to see the way it became a kind of collaborative, kid community thing. The most surprising part of it is after we got the permanent playground built, the city decided to do portable playgrounds without all of the infrastructure. Take all of the expensive infrastructure at the South Street Seaport and just give them the pure creativity. 200 blocks in these crates. And now there are 3,000 playgrounds around the world based on those blocks, including 50 in Haiti that UNICEF has purchased and developed a program. So it's become a kind of movement.
That's so fantastic. And, you know, the kids get it immediately. It took years for New Yorkers to realize that those chairs that they just sit out at public parks in France won't get ripped off.
Exactly.
If you make them look nice.
Right.
You know, a classic sort of design lesson. David Rockwell, have a great day and put some play into your day.
I'm going to work on it. Thank you.
Excellent. David Rockwell, thanks so much.
My name is Jason. I live in Yorktown, Virginia. I happen to live in a bird sanctuary, and I'm really lucky because my kids can go play outside anytime they want, and it's a safe neighborhood. At nighttime, we have no street lights, and you can just see the stars, and we can hear the owls in the trees, and it's a really wonderful, nurturing community for my boys to be growing up in.
I don't know about you. I'm going to Yorktown, Virginia. Miami, Florida. In the summer, the mosquitoes are the size of a small helicopter, and the heat in Miami is horrible, writes Janet. In winter, we love to be outside. A good swing set is the best investment.
My name is Trista Cignano, and I live in Atlanta. I let my son play outside in the front yard all the time, and luckily, living in the city, we have a lot of walkable, bikeable streets and a lot of kids in the neighborhood, so the kids do get to go outside and play. Unfortunately, it's not unsupervised like it used to be when we were younger, but they do go outside and play a lot.
This is Laura Jean in Portland, Oregon. My children play outside all day, every day. I open the door, I tell them to go outside and play, and they do. I think sometimes parents just need to take the risk that there's going to be a skinned knee, and it's okay.
All right, I'm out of here. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.